I wish to thank the organizer for the kind invitation. Just meanwhile, I will load slides. I think this is the first one. The last effort is this one. So is it visible? More or less. Okay, anyway, if I will try to improve by the next lecture. So this is the tentative program of the course. Of course, I will adjust if necessary in the course of lectures. So today I will start essentially from what usually normal lecture course is put at the very end. I will start with examples. I hope, however, that looking at examples, it could give some hints what I will speak about, some hints about what kind of integrable systems I'm going to speak about and what for. Before, just I put some list of references. Just references to the first three references will mainly be the subject of my course, and other references, some old papers about the theory of Frobenius manifolds, if somebody will be interested in some proofs and some details. Okay, so Frobenius manifolds, for mathematicians, they are mostly known. So the main source of Frobenius manifold comes from the theory of Gromov-Witten invariants of compact symplectic manifolds, and in particular of smooth projective algebraic varieties. More precisely, they appear in the description of the genus zero Gromov-Witten invariants of symplectic manifold X. Invariants means they depend only on the symplectic structure. I will not remind at the moment the construction, so this is something that I assume at the moment to be known. So this is the first source. The second source of Frobenius manifold, two different groups of mathematicians mainly are studying these two different types of Frobenius manifolds. One is the group of mathematicians that are doing with symplectic topology or with enumerative geometry and so on. But second group that usually has zero intersection with the first group is people that are studying singularity theory. And in this case, Frobenius structure appears in the description of geometry, some nice geometry of the basic universal unfolding of isolated hypersurface singularity. And here, the necessary just ingredients for the theory of Frobenius manifolds were laid down by Giorgio Saito, his theory of periods of primitive forms. Okay. Integrable systems, just in my examples, I will mainly examples that will motivate the necessity of integrable systems. I will mainly speak about the first group of first class of examples where it is very easy to explain what for does one need to deal with integrable systems just to compute higher genus Gromov-Witten invariants of the descendants. Started from genus zero. So this is the way from Frobenius manifolds to integrable systems. In the singularity theory, it is still unknown. We have in this case in a sense only genus zero objects, only Frobenius manifold itself. Although physicists would say that, okay, we are just studying a two-dimensional topological theory where the singularity plays the role of superpotential, so higher genus diagrams also make sense, but from the precise mathematical meaning of this higher genus creatures of the singularity theory, I would say still to have been clarified. So this is the very short, very brief account of the history of this idea why one should study the connections between Frobenius manifolds and integrable systems. Actually, the fundamental discovery at the end of 80s, beginning of 90s, discovery of the role of classical, the role played by classical integrable systems in quantum field theory. In this particular case, this discovery was done in the study of matrix models of two-dimensional gravity. This discovery was, maybe this was done not in the most simple, most natural way, this relationship between matrix models and integrable systems. However, the discovery was that in certain so-called double scaling limit, matrix models can be described by some particular solutions to KdV. So the partition function of matrix model is the tau function for some particular solution to KdV. Okay? This was done independently by three group of physicists around 1990. And this was the main motivation for the Witten's conjecture, for the famous Witten's conjecture 1 year maybe the very same year, maybe 1 year later, Witten's conjecture that described the intersection theory of the so-called tautological classes on the Deligne-Mahfrad spaces of stable algebraic curves, described in terms of tau function of another solution to KdV hierarchy. So this, you know, this conjecture was proved by Koncevich. Now also different proofs are available by Okinkov, Pandri, Pandai, by more recently by Mirzakhani. So this is something well established result. Let me. And this was just approximately the very same time. Witten suggested, just proposed a more general project. This was just the beginning of this study of relationship between what I call Frobenius manifolds and integrable systems. More general, Witten's project was just motivated by the question whether it was possible to describe in the intersection theory on the moduli spaces of stable maps of Riemann surfaces with punctures to the given, say, small projective variety, to describe in terms of some eventually maybe unknown integrable hierarchy. Okay, so the genus zero. The genus zero Gromov-Witten invariants, the genus zero intersection numbers, they describe Frobenius manifolds. The question was how to starting from the genus zero to proceed in computation of all higher genera, and moreover to encode the suitable generating function of a higher genus intersection numbers in terms of integrable hierarchy. So. This project, some contribution to the progress of this project were listed here. First contribution is just my discovery of a Hamiltonian structure that naturally related to the theory of arbitrary Frobenius manifolds are the Gibbs possibility to produce interval hierarchy describing genus zero invariants for any Frobenius manifold. Then the next step was done by Iguchi and his collaborators. That first they started in the mid-90s some examples of interval hierarchies involved in two-dimensional topological field theory. And then the main step was done by Iguchi, Hori, Jinji, and Chung, and also independent contribution by Sheldon Katz. At the end of 90s, this was discovery of the famous Virasoro conjecture. And this Virasoro conjecture will play an important role in the construction of interval hierarchy in this project of reconstructing interval hierarchy from Frobenius manifold. Then the next contribution was done together with Eugene Zhang, and actually main results of my mini course will be based on our joint activity with Eugene Zhang. We started to try to use this device. Here in the first step, I studied only the genus zero approximation to the future interval hierarchy. In this paper, end of 90s, we started to we tried to construct the interval hierarchy of the next approximation. In order to compute genus one, to include genus one theory. We managed to do this using some topological information, using topological recursion relations, the Dijkstra-Witten, and using the Getzer defining correlation for genus one Gromov-Witten invariant. Later, and in the general classification project that I will mainly speak about, we actually decided to invert the logical sense of the procedure. Instead of constructing interval hierarchies starting from topological information, essentially starting from knowledge of identities in the cohomology ring of the Lyman-Pras spaces, and we decided to try to recover the topological information, at least on the conjectural level, to recover the topological information started from the axioms of interval hierarchies. Now this will be the main subject of my lectures. Okay, then two more important contributions. This was the Givendahl's paper of 2001 about quantization of quadratic Hamiltonians that allows essentially the ideas. We use the ideas of this paper in order to define to study a transitive action of certain group of quantum canonical transformations on the model spaces of integrable hierarchies. And one more important step, still this stands a little bit apart from the mainstream of the study of integrable systems. This is the progress in the so-called Sapletsky field theory, as it was designed by Eliasberg, Givendahl, and Hotter. Actually, they established slightly different relationship between say topology or enumerative geometry and integrable systems. From their approach, actually one arrives at quantum integrable systems, while in this more traditional approach that goes back to the ideas of Witten, in the most traditional approach, we always arrive at classical integrable systems, classical PDE. Okay. However, there are some remarkable points of contact, but I'm not sure that I will have the time to speak also about this. Okay, so now I will proceed to looking at examples. So this first example of integrable system. And also historically, in the modern theory of integrable systems, this was just the starting point. the KdV equation. So the KdV equation itself is the second equation in my in this infinite chain. But integrability, so it means the discovery of integrability of KdV equation at the end of 60s was indeed the starting point for the modern theory of integrable systems. Although some nice examples of integrable Hamilton, finite dimensional Hamiltonian systems were known since 19th century, only just with the advent of KdV, with the discovery of integrability of partial differential equation. This is partial differential equation. This subscript x means x derivative, and three times x means triple x derivative. And so one x and one time for in every equation. Okay, the variable x is called we'll call space. Okay, so we have one space and many times. Okay, so the main property. From the point of view, there are many, of course, approaches to ways to explaining what it means, integrability. But the simplest way is the following. Just we consider any of these PDEs, this, and so on, as a vector field on the space of function of one variable x. So vector field means this is a derivative function u with respect to time. Okay? This all vector fields commute. We have infinite number of commuting vector fields. And commutativity means it's very simple identity. We do not need to think about in what functional space we are living in. This is just some formal identity. Means that equality of mixed derivatives. If you take, say, for example, this equation, take derivative with respect to T2 using the right-hand side. And the second computation would take this equation, take derivative with T1, with respect to T1 using this KdV equation. Then when after computation, we obtain two very long differential polynomials in U. So polynomials in U and derivatives in X. So commutativity means that these two differential polynomials are identically equal. So the coefficients are adjusted in such a way to ensure validity of this infinite sequence of commutativity identities. Okay? So here epsilon arises for the first time. So I put on purpose this epsilon into the PDEs, although they can be easily eliminated. If you just look carefully at the equation, that you can easily guess that rescaling x and t, so if you rescale x to something like x over epsilon, so this is we and t to t over epsilon, then you will, after this rescaling, epsilon will disappear. However, it will be technically important for me to keep epsilon in. This is in physical setup, just where KdV equation arises already with small parameter. This is called small dispersion parameter. This is not of very importance for me. That's just this name. However, it is important to keep the small parameter in. Actually, I will later admit PDEs that with infinite, that contain infinite terms in epsilon in the right-hand side. That this will be the only way to deal with such PDEs. Also, this small parameter will be the parameter of the genus expansion in the theory of Gromov-Witten invariants. It is property. It is not. It is a property of this equation, commutativity. This is. Okay. I just wanted to emphasize this very simple property, commutativity. This is not definition. I will come to definition later. I will add more and more restrictions on this besides compute. So in principle, the interesting problem, of course, will be just to classify the infinite families of commuting PD. Okay, but maybe this is this question is too complicated to perform such a classification. So we will add more restrictions for this to the PD instead of commutativity. Okay. So basically our the presence of the small parameter at this point, which just I can tell immediately what is the one of the important but simple tricks. The presence of the small parameter will allow to analyze commutativity identities as just an expansion with respect to small parameter. First of all, to check the validity of this commutativity identity in the order epsilon to the zero, then in the next order epsilon squared, and so such a perturbative analysis of commutativity and conjugate of integrability in the sense I'm going to explain later will be an important step. So then, just a reminder of the construction. So the integrability theory of QDV is based on the using of the so-called Lax operator. Since I performed rescaling of X, also the Lax operator will contain epsilon in front of the leading of the highest derivatives. And this is the Lax representation of the QDV hierarchy. So the derivative of Lax, of the Lax operator L, is nothing but the derivative of U with respect to TK, with respect to the time. So in the left-hand side, we essentially obtain du over dtk. And the claim is that this derivative of the Lax operator can be represented as commutator of L with some linear differential operators of order 2k plus 1 that can be constructed recursively by doing the following procedure by this algorithm of the so-called fractional powers. We take L to 2k plus 1 over 2. This is pseudo differential operator, so it contains finite number of differential terms plus infinite sequence of negative powers. This label plus means that we have to take to keep only differential part of the operator. Okay, so this is just first two operators. So the first is just derivative. A1 is certain third order linear differential operator, and so on. So this is absolutely standard construction of the KDV hierarchy that one can find in any textbook in the theory of integrable systems. And mainly when people are saying that they study classification, or were saying they were studied classification of integrable systems, they were trying to classify this scheme. Started from just taking some ansatz for the Lax operator. They studied what kinds of PDEs, of integrable PDEs, are related to this Lax operator. We do not want to postulate the existence of Lax operator from the very beginning. Instead, we want to, or at least better to say, we hope to derive a Lax operator at the very end of the day. So, solutions I'm going to consider only the solutions that are admit regular expansion with respect to small parameter epsilon. This is a very strong restriction, by the way. You probably have heard about some soliton solution, multi-soliton solution for the KDV hierarchy. They do not admit such a regular expansion. When this parameter of rescaling goes to zero, then the solitons becomes very sharp shape. So in the limit epsilon goes to zero, it looks like delta function. And the same holds true for finite gap solutions to KDV. When epsilon goes to zero, they become rapidly oscillation such. Okay. So the solutions, I will consider only the solutions that admit at least such formal expansion in the small parameter epsilon. Here my hierarchy contains only even powers of epsilon, so I will keep only even powers, but in general one can just put any powers. So then I come to refer to the important part of the KDV theory. This was discovery of Sato and his group, the idea of tau function. Again, this is just very first approximation to the idea of tau function. This is the famous formula that with the second logarithmic derivative. Again, I have to put epsilon squared in front of this formula with the second logarithmic derivative. Then, of course, if U admits regular expansion in epsilon squared, then the log tau will admit regular, almost regular, I mean, in G equals zero, this will epsilon to minus two, almost regular expansion in epsilon. Okay? So the tau functions in the question will always be of such a form. Okay? But of course, tau function depends on the choice of the solution. This dependence is not exactly is not determined uniquely by the second logarithmic derivative formula, since we must say what are derivatives with respect to times. Okay, since the solution of this infinite sequence of commutative equations, they depends on x, t0, t1, and so on. So tau also will be a function of x to 0 to 1. On x to 0, this is essentially the same. X will be often omitted, but this is the more precise normalization for the second logarithmic derivative with respect to arbitrary pair of times. After this, the tau function is determined uniquely after multiplication by exponential of a linear function. If you look at this formula, so this residue of the commutator of two operators, one is differential operator, the positive part of fractional power, another is another pseudo-differential operator, contains infinite expansion, infinite in d over dx inverse. So the residue is, by definition, is the coefficient of d over dx inverse, and this formula is not completely completely tautological, since the left-hand side must be symmetric in P and Q. So the right-hand side must be symmetric. It is not a big deal to check symmetry in this particular case, but essentially the existence of such a symmetric tensor will be the main step in the general definition of tau function. Okay? So now the another property of KDV hierarchy. This is I'm coming to Virasoro, to the role of Virasoro algebra in the KDV hierarchy. What is the origin of the Virasoro algebra? So the algebra of symmetries. We are studying now the symmetries. What are symmetries of an equation? Symmetries are transformation or maps that transformations that map solutions to solutions. Okay. Infinitesimal symmetry, of course, is a vector field. So, infinitesimal transformation. So, of course, any equation of the KDV hierarchy is a symmetry by definition. Infinitesimal symmetry, since all these vector fields commute. So, this is commutative algebra symmetry. It turns out that KDV admits a non-commutative algebra of symmetries. These are Virasoro symmetries, and the simplest of the starting point of this algebra of Virasoro symmetries is very easy actually to understand the origin. It comes from the Galilean invariants of the KDV hierarchy. So the KDV hierarchy physically determines the describes propagation of waves just on shallow water. The Galilean invariance corresponds to the invariance with respect to changing of the frame. So we go to the co-moving frame that moves with the constant speed c. Of course, then c should be added to u, as the speed of the fluid. Okay, and this is the standard Galilean transformation. Okay, So all these three lines is the Galilean, and you can immediately check that the KdV equation is invariant with respect to this Galilean transformation. So it can be extended to the symmetry of the entire KdV hierarchy. Then if you rewrite the symmetry, this is a very simple exercise. You can do this just in 2 minutes. How to rewrite the infinitesimal generator of this symmetry, but by acting not on U, but acting on the tau function. You have to integrate twice. Okay? Then, of course, there are some subtleties about the choice of integration constant. However, one can choose the integration constant in such a way that the infinitesimal generator of the Galilean symmetry acts by the following operator that is denote L minus 1. Okay? So L minus 1, the first of the infinite sequence of the Virasoro symmetries, comes just from the Galilean symmetry, the generator of the Galilean symmetry by acting onto the tau function. Other symmetries of the KdV hierarchy are, in terms of U, acting on U, are written in a little bit cumbersome formula, but by acting onto tau function, they always act, the infinitesimal generator always act by certain linear second order differential operator, acting on the times of the hierarchy. This is a general structure. I don't want to be more specific here to say what are these coefficients. There are some factorials. So the claim is that taking this operator for m greater or equal than minus 1, one obtains, and acting by these operators onto the tau function, one obtains infinitesimal symmetries of the KdV hierarchy. Actually, one can include, this is only half of the Virasoro algebra that acts by symmetries of the KdV hierarchy. One can extend this in this particular case to the to a full representation of the Virasoro algebra that in this case will satisfy the commutation relation with the central charge 1. So using the symmetries, one can define very particularly important solution to the hierarchy that is invariant with respect to this all these symmetries. Actually, it suffices to require the invariance only with respect to L minus 1, so Galilean invariance. This is difficult vacuum tau function. Strangely, people in the theory of iterable systems did not pay much attention to this vacuum tau function. To my best knowledge, it has been started to be studied just after all this progress in the two-dimensional topological field theory, starting by Katz and Schwarz, and then by, I mean, in the mathematical literature, then by Isaacson and Di Francesco Isaacson Zuber. Okay, so this is vacuum tau function. You see, this had some bad singularity with respect to one. The time T1 corresponds to the KdV equation itself. T0 is at the space variable, and T2, T3 are some more other times of the hierarchy. So it has some bad singularity in T1. See, first of all, this factor, minus T1 to 1 over 24, in front of the common factor in front of this tau function, it is not that serious. However, in the expansion, in every coefficient front of 1 over epsilon square, 1 over epsilon square to the 0, epsilon square, and so on, one has just series in 1 over T1. But the structure, however, one can deal with this function in the following way. So expanding every terms in every square bracket, every terms in T0, then it turns out that in every power of T0, coefficient of every power of T0 is finite polynomial on 1 over T1 and finite number of other terms. This is, perhaps this is just was observed, this nice structure by Isaacson and his collaborators. Okay? So this is the precise definition. Otherwise, you see, this is the way to define precisely this vacuum cell function to play an important role. Okay, this is actually as the basic point in the space of all solutions admitting regular expansion. Then, more known, however, is the tangent of another solution to the KdV hierarchy that we call topological solution. Or topological tau function that is obtained the following way. Take vacuum tau function and do shift by one along T1. Okay? Then, let me return. The advantage of this high tech is that one can easily return to the previous slide, what I am doing. So if you do shift by two by one in here, then one can re-expand all these terms by using geometrical series. So the result will be perfectly well-defined power series, okay, due to this previous property that I mentioned, previous property of the vacuum tau function. And actually the theorem, this is a precise formulation of the Kotsevich-Witten theorem, that this that log of the topological tau function is the intersection is the generating function for the intersection numbers of the so-called tautological classes on the Lie Mapper spaces of stable algebraic curves. Okay, so psi classes is the first chain classes of the tautological n bundle on the Lie Mapper space MGN, and the times of the hierarchy now are just the independent variables of the generating function. Okay. Yes. The variable x, actually, I do write it, sometimes I don't, since the variable x shift along x is the same that shift along t0. Okay. So the first equation of the hierarchy was du over dt0 was equal to du over dx. So essentially, that if I want to reinsert x, I should replace t0 by t0 plus x. Okay, so I will always remember about such a possibility, but very often I will omit x in writing the formula for tau function. Okay. So this is just the way, so when then you're using the KdV, knowing the equation of the KdV hierarchy, you can easily compute any number of terms. So now you see the role of this epsilon is hardly visible, however it is important to keep it. So the terms of in front of 1 over epsilon square, this gives the generated function of the genus 0 intersection numbers. Okay? Terms epsilon to the 0, so without epsilon in this this parenthesis, this is genus 1. Epsilon square corresponds to genus 2, and so on. Okay? So this just shows why it was so important for me to keep epsilon in the equation in the KdV equations, just to separate the contributions. You see, the entire sum is hardly defined, is badly defined as just formal power series, but it's important to separate the contributions of different genera. Okay. Another example, also related to Gromov-Witten invariance, is the so-called extended Toda hierarchy. I will explain what it means extended. First of all, recall the standard Toda. In this case, the Lax operator, the previously was differential operator, now it is difference operator. Difference means that lambda is the shift by epsilon. Okay, the operator of shift. But however, for me, epsilon is just independent parameter. This is important. Otherwise, the spectral properties of this operator become very complicated. So this is the operator in the normalization used by Ueno Takasaki, I think. So it has two unknown functions, u and v, and as always, one space variable, this x, that x is here, okay? The variable x is the space variable. Okay? Now, the word extended of the hierarchy means the following. One has the following, this is the standard of the hierarchy. What is written here? This, again, the derivative of the Lax operator with respect to times of the hierarchy. I denote times t sub k. So derivative means this derivative of this is zero. Derivative of the, one will get derivative of v and derivative of e to the u, differentiating with respect to time. In the right-hand side, one has commutator of two different operators, the operator L itself, and then this operator is obtained as follows. Take L to the power k plus 1. This will, difference operator that will contain lambda to the k and lambda to minus k. So shifts both in k steps on the right, k steps on the left. Then this subscript plus says that one just threw away all negative shifts. Keep only shifts on one side, positive side, but non-negative, excuse me, side. Okay. Then this is the construction of the standard construction of the hierarchy. This is one of the most known, most popular integrable systems on the market. Okay. Now, what it means extended to the hierarchy? One has to add one more, another infinite sequence of times, but one has to put into the game a suitably defined logarithm of this difference operator. Logarithm. Although the reason for the necessity of logarithm was known, it was mentioned by Gucci in collaborators in the middle of 90s, so, but however, some tricks is needed. To very simple trick to just to define this logarithm. So again, we must deal not with the logarithm operator using spectral expansion and so on. The trick is the following: using the dressing operators, this is done by our joint paper with Carlet and Zhang. So there are actually two dressing operators. This is for extra in iterable systems. The construction of this logarithm. There are two dressing operators, P and Q. One is dressing that reduces L to the shift lambda on the right. And this dressing operator, P, contains negative, essentially, powers of shifts and negative powers. It kills all this negative power. Another dressing operator, say Q, reduces L to the shift on the left, lambda inverse. Call this dressing operator Q, and this contains positive powers of lambda. Okay? So one can sense log lambda is actually epsilon d over dx. One has two candidates for logs. Take log lambda and dress by P. Take log lambda inverse and dress by Q. So the right answer actually is that one has to take the average of these two logs to obtain the right the second half of this for the hierarchy. Okay, the role of this half of the sum is that the this log L will be again difference operator. It will be infinite in both direction, but the coefficients will look something like differential polynomials. Actually, I call this differential epsilon polynomials. That means they will have infinite expansions in epsilon. In every order in epsilon, this coefficient will be differential polynomial in U and V. Dressing operators are not in this ring of epsilon differential polynomial. Okay, but after taking this combination, one obtains such almost the operator, difference operator with almost local coefficients. Okay. So this is just a reminder of the standard TODA equation. This is S0, well, actually stands for the space variable. So this is the equation. Okay, so you see if we divide it by epsilon and formally expand and the power of epsilon on the right-hand side, one obtains infinite expansion, of course, in epsilon. So this example is a very simple interval system with infinite expansion and absolutely the right hand side. Yes, infinite both sides. Okay, but coefficients are differential polynomials with this small extension, differential polynomials in every order in epsilon. In U and V. So this is the standard order that again was discovered again in 60s. So here double dot, maybe it is not visible of UN. So this is the system of particles on the line with exponential interaction. Okay, so this is one because of this. This is the total lattice as it was appeared in the mid 60s, and what I'm dealing with essentially this is the continuous expansion. So we instead of U here is function of the lattice, but epsilon is just the mesh of the lattice. My formal parameter of the formal small parameter is the mesh of the lattice. So this is the definition of the tau function in terms of U and V variables. So here you have the second difference derivative of log tau gives U, and to get V one has to take one derivative along T0 and one difference derivative along S0. Okay? This is the definition, and after this we can again, one can also to introduce the analog of Galilean symmetry in this case, and to define vacuum tau function. This is just the generator of the Galilean symmetry acting on the tau function. Okay? Take this vacuum tau function, and again, it has some bad singularity that I don't want to describe now, but do again the shift. Now we have two, actually, infinite sequences of times. T times, the standard times of the total hierarchy, and S times, this new time. S0 was just a space, but S1, S2 are just new times of the extended total hierarchy. Do the shift by one along S1, along the first new time. Now the claim is, this is our result by Zhang, but actually all the topological information, all the necessary topological information was already obtained by Gessler, Okunkov, Pandari, Panda. That after such a shift inserted into the topological, into vacuum tau function, the topological, by definition, this is called topological tau function for Toda, is the total Gromov-Witten potential for the projective line, for the Riemann sphere. Okay? So again, this can just a reminder of the Gromov-Witten potential. Here, by the way, it is clear why one has to use two sequences of times, since in this case one has two, what this is called, primaries. One primaries correspond to the unity in the cohomology ring of the sphere. Another phi 2, this is the area element in H2 of the Riemann sphere, normalized in such a way. Okay, so one sequence called the standard times of Toda hierarchy, T0, T1, corresponds to this cohomology, to this basic element in the cohomology ring and to the descendants of this class, okay? The standard Toda. The non-standard Toda, the extension, corresponds to the descendants of the identity, okay? So this is, because of this, we do need two sequences. Okay, so this is just a reminder of this again analog of the topological classes on the moduli spaces of the maps of stable maps of Riemann surfaces with n punctures of the given degree beta to the sphere, and this is evaluation maps that applied at these two classes. Okay? Again, just one can put and compute. Okay. I'm not sure that even the coefficients can be visible, but however. Restricting this tau function on the so-called small phase space where all the descendants are switched off when they're paying attention only on two variables, S0 and T0. No descendants, and this is just the potential of the corresponding Frobenius manifold, and this will be one of the main examples, this Frobenius manifold in my lectures. Okay. My time is almost over, however, 5 minutes. Less known examples I want to mention briefly at the end. First example, let me return again to KdV, okay, to top function of KdV. So this is a function of infinite sequence of times. Let me represent this in the following way. I will consider times as the coefficient of expansion of series in 1 over z. It's actually given that, and that's also in his business with quadratic Hamiltonians. Okay, this is series in 1 over z without free term. Okay, so then the vacuum term function is a kind of functional on this space of formal series. So this is just the purely linguistic, of course, to call this function of infinite sequence of time. So I called it functional on formal series, functions on coefficients. Okay? For example, topological, how to obtain topological top function from the vacuum, from this functional? Shift by minus 1 over z squared. So this corresponds to shift by 1 along T1. Okay, it's clear. So let me perform now a different shift. Introduce function f of v. This j1 is the modified Bessel function. If you don't know what it means, modified Bessel function, this is just the definition by the expansion. Okay? And consider the log vacuum function as x, 1 over zx minus this function f of 1 over z. Okay, and I will suppress all times. Okay, then they claim that this is the degenerating function of the Weyl-Petterson volumes of the Dilima for spaces. Okay. And this again, of course, this is a theorem. This is not a theorem, not a serious theorem. This is just a reformulation of the results of Kaufman, Mannion, Zagier, and Zograff, and finally Mannion, Zograff. That gives the description of these volumes in terms of the intersections of the tautological classes and the dilemma for space. So this is actually the value of a different, corresponds to a different tau function. Not the vacuum tau function, not the topological tau function, since instead of shift by one, we perform shift by this Bessel function. Okay? So that means that I want to say that instead of studying just one tau function that corresponds to Gromov-Witten, it makes sense also to look around, to look at other tau functions, other solutions. So that the theory of KdV is actually richer than just the theory of intersection numbers of tautological classes. Okay? So another example. This is the, now I again return to Toda. Toda vacuum tau function enumeration of fat graphs. This again theorem, just joint work in progress with Tamara Grava. That's again reformulation of known results, but just reformulation that might be of some interest. Take again the same vacuum tau function, but now perform shift not. Previously, we did shift alone S1 by 1, okay, to produce the Gromov-Witten invariance of the sphere, two-dimensional sphere. Now, instead, we do shift by alone T1, okay? And actually, I suppress all the new variables F, but is 0, and I just change slightly the notation for this times TK. Then the claim is the following. After such a shift, suppressing LS's and shift by 1, one obtains some singular part. Here B is Bernoulli numbers, okay, plus regular parts, And this time I will be interested mainly in this regular part. Okay? And this regular part is just the degenerating function for the connected fed graphs of genus G with n vertexes of the valences k1, kn, so of this coefficient of the expansion of the degenerating function. Fg means that, as usual, the coefficient in front of this epsilon 2g minus 2. This is just notation, but this notation actually has a direct connection to the genus. And genus of the fed graphs is the following. So, for example, on this picture, this is fed graph of genus 1. That means that it cannot be put onto the surface of genus 0 on the sphere. It can be put only on torus because of this genus 1. So this x is just the parameter of the space variable, and h is the difference of early characteristics of the sphere on the graph. And ag is just the numbers of the fed graphs with the normalized by the order of the symmetry group of the fed graphs. Okay? So this is the transformation. So you see, just in a sense, we have transformation from the Gromovitian invariance of the sphere to fed graphs, shift back by S1 and shift forward along T1 now. Then we transform some problem of enumerative geometry to some problem of combinatorial topology and graphs. Okay, so this again, what you obtain just computing explicitly this tau function using equations of Toda. Here you do not need to use the second half of the extended Toda. This only standard times of Toda are needed. Okay, so these are just logarithmic terms that come from the here the singular terms, and regular terms are just the degenerating function. For example, again, the epsilon, the powers of epsilon separate the contribution of fed graphs of different genus. Why I'm saying that this is just reformulation? Of course, this reformulation of the theory of Hermitian matrix models is just due to Toft and by Bissetti-Zixson-Zuber. Hermitian matrix models, the main point is that this is Hermitian matrix model. So fix number n, consider the space of all n times n Hermitian matrices, and integrate over the space exponential of minus 1 over epsilon trace of polynomial. My lambda will be just the coefficients of this polynomial. This polynomial will be just quadratic terms, well, other terms started from degree 3. Okay. Then the main point is that this. I don't know who actually discovered this. The main point that this partition function of the Hermitian matrix model is the tau function of Toda lattice. Toda lattice. I just asked many. I personally learned this from Alexander Eads in 90s. In the beginning of 90s, but maybe he was not the first. I wasn't able to find what was the first discovery. It was already after these papers about double scaling limit and so after the discovery of the role of integrable systems. Anyway, so more precisely, how we deal with this matrix integral. So if all lambdas are equal to zero, then this is Hermitian matrix integral. It can be, it is Gaussian integral. E2 minus 1 over epsilon trace a square, 1 over 2 a square. It can be computed explicitly. Okay. Then we use the saddle point expansion, assuming epsilon goes to zero, and this usual, then the usual Feynman diagram technique applied to this integral gives you the interpretation of the coefficients of the expansion in terms of fed graphs. And this was actually the observation of this paper. Okay. More precisely, one has to proceed to arrive at the solution I was describing. One has to do the following. Okay. Do the saddle point expansion when epsilon goes to zero, then one obtains the coefficient R polynomials, the coefficients of the saddle point expansion are polynomials in N. Okay? Then one has to replace N by X over epsilon. This was is the way the space variable enters into the game. And finally, what was the origin of these singular terms, logs and Bernoulli numbers? They come from the asymptotic expansion of the volume of the unitary group. Okay? Doing this asymptotic expansion, also after the substitution, one obtains the tail function from the previous slide. Okay? This actually is the correct asymptotic expansion of the Hermitian matrix, not just formal trick. The correct asymptotic expansion of the this Hermitian matrix integral for the so-called one-cut asymptotics. This means the following. One can consider this Hermitian integral as the probability distribution of the specific Hermitian matrices. So random, because of this, is called the theory of random matrices. Eigenvalue of random matrices are random numbers. So when the size of the Hermitian matrix grows, then the number of eigenvalues becomes very, very just n, of course. So one-cut case, that means that asymptotically these eigenvalues of this random matrix fill just one interval. They accumulate within a single interval. Okay, then indeed this one-cut case, the formal series that I wrote down in the previous slide is just the asymptotic expansion. So then one of the interesting questions that I'm going to write at the last lecture, how to apply interval system to use to describe so-called multi-cut asymptotic expansion in Hermitian matrix models, where the asymptotic distribution of eigenvalues contains the support of the asymptotic distribution is not one single interval, but more than one interval. Okay, let me stop today.